Well, good morning. We are in for a treat today. We got a couple friends visiting us all the way from Bolivia, and I'm going to bring them up here on stage in just a few minutes to talk to them about what is going on in their country and what's going on with Food for the Hungry and with our community-to-community relationship with USPA-USPA. We have Juan Pablo Belmonte and Abby Barral with us today. I've known Juan Pablo for, I think it's been about 8 years now. I met him the very first time that we went to Bolivia. And there's a lot of things that I could say about him, but one thing that sticks out to me is that he's a foodie, all right? Which is always a great trait in a person who is leading you on a team in a country. And so our first time down there, he knew all the best places to go and eat in Cochabamba, which was amazing. We went to this one steak place where, it might have been the greatest steak that I've ever eaten in my life, and it was $6. It was amazing. And so then it was like, I think we went back twice more during the week when we were there. Now Juan Pablo has transitioned out. He works for FHUS. Now Abby has taken his place as the team's coordinator. She's wonderful as well. Last time we were in Bolivia, Juan Pablo had us over to his dad's house and he barbecued for us, which was really good. Juan Pablo's dad, do you remember those Dos Equis commercials that had like the most interesting man in the world? Like, based on his dad, I'm telling you, this guy is amazing. My favorite thing about him is that, so he was in the Bolivian military, and you guys know Che Guevara, like the Latin American freedom fighter guy. Juan Pablo's dad was part of the Bolivian army that like took him down and captured him, and so fought against Che Guevara, among other things. But anyway, Abby and Juan Pablo both are just absolutely amazing, and they are so good to us when we're in Bolivia. And I'm excited to have them up here to share with us today about Food for the Hungry and what is going on. But to transition into that, I want to contextualize what we're talking about today into what we're going through just in the big picture. You know, we're in the middle of a sermon series called Sacred Spaces. It is on the book of Hebrews, and we've been in it for a couple weeks now. And if you know anything about the book of Hebrews, you'll know that it's a very, very complicated theological book. The first time you read through it, if you're not familiar with all the Old Testament imagery, it is just very, very easy to get lost in it and think, man, I know there's a good message in here somewhere, but I'm really having a difficult time understanding it. And that's part of why we're doing this series, is we're hoping to explain that. But in the midst of this, you know, of all the Old Testament allusions and everything that the author of Hebrews goes to, the point that he tries to make is that Jesus is our great high priest, and that he is a better high priest than Aaron was, because Aaron was sinful, and so all of the priests after him, likewise, sinful, so they had to offer up sacrifices for their own sins before they could offer up sacrifices for the people. But unlike that, Jesus, because he was sinless, offered himself once and for all, paid for our sins once and for all, and so he is a greater high priest than Aaron was. And so, you know, what he was trying to communicate to the original audience was, since that is true, and since Jesus' ministry is so much better than Aaron's was, it doesn't make sense when things get rough to kind of retreat back to the old ways, which is what the Hebrews were tempted to do, to retreat back to the old ways and the Judaism that they were raised up in. It was a safer thing, and the author of Hebrews didn't want them to do that. But he makes this point that Jesus is just our great high priest, right? That's the theological idea of the book. Now I want you, before we launch into Bolivia, I want you to turn real quickly to Hebrews chapter 4. We're gonna look at some just big picture concept ideas of Hebrews and place our message today into Hebrews. This is Hebrews chapter 4. I'm gonna read verses 14 through 16. It says, since then we have a great high priest who has passed through the heavens, Jesus, the Son of God, let us hold fast to our confession. For we do not have a high priest who is unable to sympathize with our weaknesses, but one who in every respect has been tempted as we are, yet without sin. And let us then with confidence draw near to the throne of grace, that we may receive mercy and find grace in our help, to help in our time of need. All right, now we're gonna stop there for a second. So we haven't gotten this far in the book yet, but when we do get to there, we'll have seen that the author has kind of made this case that Jesus is our high priest. And when he gets to chapter 4, he says, all right, so there's two implications of this, because we have this great high priest. The first, he says, is let's hold fast to our confession. Right? He's reminding him, like, we're on Jesus' team, and let's never forget that. We're going to hold fast to this confession. But then the second thing he says is, let's draw near to God with confidence. In other words, because of Jesus' ministry, just almost like the song we just sang about no longer slaves, like we don't have to be afraid anymore. We're no longer slaves and slaves to sin and afraid of God, but we're sons and daughters now, and we can have confidence to approach God with boldness. Now, Jeremiah and I have been working on this spiritual formation element to go along with the sermon series, and Dick already alluded to that in the announcement time. So please check out your bulletin announcement to see what is what's going on with that. But when we talk about spiritual formation, we oftentimes think about withdrawal to a quiet place. I don't know about you, but my mind always thinks of like going on a retreat to like a beach resort or something and having a lot of time in your Bible, a lot of time in prayer, maybe a little bit of time in corporate worship. But I often tend to think of spiritual formation as something that you do in private. And while that is certainly true, that a lot of spiritual formation can happen in private and in contemplation, that really is only part of the picture. Okay, Christian spirituality is contemplative, but we are contemplatives in action, right? So in other words, if our spiritual formation doesn't translate into action, then it isn't really true like a Christian spiritual formation. Now, and I want to show you why I think that. This is also in Hebrews. Let's turn a couple chapters over. This is chapter 10. Chapter 10, he kind of says the same thing as in chapter 4, only elaborates a little bit further. I want to start reading in verse 19. It says, therefore, brothers, since we have confidence to enter the holy places by the blood of Jesus, by the new and living way that he opened for us through the curtain, that is, through his flesh, and since we have a great priest over the house of God, okay, again, he's bringing up this high priesthood idea. Here's what he says we should do since we have this high great priest, or this great high priest. Verse 22, let us draw near with a true heart in full assurance of faith, with our hearts sprinkled clean from an evil conscience and our bodies washed with pure water. Pause there for a second. Again, there's this idea of we have this great priest, let's draw near to God. Same thing he said in chapter 4. Verse 23, let us hold fast to the confession of our hope without wavering, for he who promised is faithful. Pause there for a second. Same thing as chapter 4. Let's hold fast to this confession that we have. And then here's where he's going to elaborate and continue on. This is verse 24. And let us consider how to stir up one another to love and good works, not neglecting to meet together, as is the habit of some, but encouraging one another, and all the more as you see the day drawing near. So the author of Hebrews says, because we have this high priest, Jesus is a great high priest, we want to hold fast to our confession, we want to draw near to God, but then he says, but let's also, what that's going to look like for us is spurring one another to love and good works and continuing to meet together in order to do that. And so there is this idea that drawing near to God, learning to see God in the everyday, learning to see the world as our sacred space should spur us on to love and good works. And I think G.K. Chesterton illustrates this the best in his book, Orthodoxy. There's this section where he's kind of combating the idea that all religions are basically the same and they just kind of word the same things differently. He's arguing against that idea. And he uses as an illustration Buddhism and Christianity and Buddhist spirituality versus Christian spirituality, especially as they're presented in art. And I absolutely love how he puts this because I think he nails it with just a great illustration. This is G.K. Chesterton from Orthodoxy. He says, even when I thought with most other well-informed, though unscholarly people, that Buddhism and Christianity were alike, so he's like, even when I believe that, there was one thing about them that always perplexed me. And I mean the startling difference in their type of religious art. Now, I don't mean in its technical style of representation. but in the things that it was manifestly meant to represent. No two ideals could be more opposite than a Christian saint in a Gothic cathedral and a Buddhist saint in a Chinese temple. The opposition exists at every point, but perhaps the shortest statement of it is that the Buddhist saint always has his eyes shut, while the Christian saint always has them very wide open. The Buddhist saint has a sleek and harmonious body, but his eyes are heavy and sealed with sleep. The medieval saint's body is wasted to its crazy bones, but his eyes are frightfully alive. There cannot be any real community of spirit between forces that produce symbols so different as that. Granted that both images are extravagances, they are perversions of the true creed, but there must be a real divergence which could produce such opposite extravagances. And then here's where he summarizes what he thinks this art means, and I like this. The Buddhist is looking with a peculiar intentness inwards. The Christian is staring with a frantic intentness outwards. And if we follow that clue steadily, we shall find some interesting things. I really like that. He says, you know, when you look at Buddhist art, their idea of spirituality is always kind of this inner harmony and looking within, where he says, if you look at art depicting Christian saints, they're always on mission. They always have their eyes out at the world and God's creation and thinking, how can I bring the gospel? How can I bring the love of God? How can I bring the spirit to the world? And I think that's true. So over the next few weeks, we're going to continue our Sacred Spaces series, and we're going to be talking about Christian spirituality, and we're going to get into some of these spiritual exercises and spiritual formation things. But we're going to learn how to be contemplatives in action. All right, we want to be contemplatives in action. In the summer, we're going to do a series on the life of Jesus and what do we believe about Jesus? And along with that, we're going to have a whole ton of service opportunities for us to put our faith in action, to be contemplatives in action. And the first of these is actually happening before the summer, and that's our upcoming mission trip to Bolivia. And the folks on the team that we've been training since, before Christmas, we meet a lot. I make people do a lot of work to go to Bolivia. And so we've been doing it. We've only got a couple more meetings left. I mean, it is crazy how time flies, and we're leaving in just over 2 weeks. It's crazy for me to even think about that. I got a lot to do. But many of you, if you've been around for a long time, you're very, very familiar with this community-to-community relationship that we have with USPA USPA Bolivia. But a lot of you are also new, and you're probably hearing this for the first time. And so before we bring Juan Pablo and Abby up, I do want to explain what in the world it is that we're going to be talking about. So we are in this partnership. It's a 10-year relationship, and we're working with an organization called Food for the Hungry. We might call it FH at times. But the community that we're working with is called USPA USPA, and it is a little peri-urban area on the outskirts of Cochabamba, Bolivia. And I want to say Cochabamba has about 500,000 people in it. Is that about right, Juan Pablo? He's telling me yes. I don't know that he knows. I don't know the population of all of the United States major cities. It's a big city, though, bigger than Tacoma, not quite as big as Seattle, though. But we work on the outskirts in this region called USPA USPA. And the reason this community exists is that Bolivia historically has been mining has been a very important industry for them, but the mines recently are not as productive, and so you have all these folks in the rural communities that have made a living off of mining that now find themselves out of work, and so they're looking for something to do, so they come to the cities looking for work. Only in Bolivian culture, there's kind of a mix of the indigenous, the old Incan culture has survived, and then combined with the Spanish culture that brought over when Westerners came over to South America. And so you have some folks there that they only speak the tribal languages, Quechua or Aymara, things that have survived for thousands of years, and maybe they don't even know Spanish. But most of the Bolivian economy is based on the marketplace. Spanish is the language of the marketplace. So if you don't know Spanish, it's very, very difficult for you to find work. And so you've got a lot of people that come to the cities and they really don't have the job skills to enter into the economy. So they settle in these places like USPA USPA on the outskirts of the city. And there are these kind of squatter towns that rise up. And they eventually become really nice. But as you can imagine, with the poverty there, there are just a ton of social issues that go along with that. Now, FH, they moved in 2010. We partnered with them in 2010. And they work primarily with children, And the idea is if they can help the children, especially in the youngest formative years, if they can help the children get through school, they can help them break out of this cycle of poverty. Poverty tends to be cyclical. For instance, you know, if your parents are poor, as soon as you're old enough to work, they will be tempted to pull you out of school to put you to work to provide income for the family. But without graduating from school, you're probably going to continue this cycle for our next generation. So FH is trying to break that cycle. They work primarily with children, but they've also realized that, you know, the family is a unit, and if things are not good with the parents, things aren't good in their marriage, things aren't good in the family structure, that this is going to affect the kids. So they also work with the entire family. And we partnered with them in 2010, and the relationship is called a community-to-community partnership. We're one community, USPA is the other one. And so there's four elements of the relationship. The first one is child sponsorship. And I don't know the exact numbers anymore, but it's well over 200 kids that we sponsor from our church. So that's one thing. The second thing is community projects. The community itself, the people of USPA got together in 2010 when FH first came, and they worked together to say, you know, what do you wish life looked like? If things could change, what are the things that you would change about life in USPA? And they came up with a 10-year plan of things that they would like to see change. And we've been a part of helping, you know, and FH obviously has done most of the work, but we've been a help of bringing about some of that change. So there are things like clean water, things like a better library system for the kids in school. We've done a lot of work with churches there in the local area. Things like that, community projects that the people of USPA have come up with. So that's the second thing, community projects. The third one is short-term trips. We take a trip down to Bolivia every year. And then the last one is prayer. We pray for them, they pray for us. So last year we did a clean water project. And this year we're back to working with a local church. And actually we've got a video to play. It just came in last night at 10 o'clock from the field. And just an update as to how things are going. And Avi helped me translate it into English, and we got subtitles on it and stuff. So it's actually a really cool video. I'm looking forward to playing it. But we're going to be partnering with the church again this year. We've worked with them. We've worked with them every year we've been down. But a number of our projects have been physically working on the church. Like we built them a bathroom, we built them some classroom space, things like that. But we're going to continue that work this year. And it has just been amazing to partner with FH and just see this transformation go on in USPA over the years. And we've got 2 years left, and then we'll figure out what's next after that. But I'm looking forward to seeing what is going to go on in the next 2 years. But this time I'm going to invite my friends up here. This is Juan Pablo Belmonte. And I can't say Avi's last name because it involves rolling an R, but it's Avi Barral. You could imagine what that sound like if I could actually say it right. Can we welcome them up? Okay, let me make sure we got all of these right. This is for you. And Juan Pablo, can I check in yours and make sure it's on correctly?
Sure.
I should be right, although I have a really bad reputation with the AV stuff, so we might need Phil or Todd to come bail me out. As always, they're good for that. Introductions, I guess. Juan Pablo is the field liaison manager, that's your title, for Food for the Hungry. He works out of the Phoenix office. He actually works for FHUS, and what he does is anybody who wants to take a mission trip down to Latin America. I think it's Bolivia, Peru, and Nicaragua, the three countries mostly that you deal with?
Yes, correct.
Yeah, they work through him. And then Abby is our team's coordinator, and she is, so my job in arranging these trips is to get the team down to La Paz. Once we get to La Paz, Abby is waiting for us at the airport, and we hand things over to her, and she is our leader after that. She's our translator. She tells us what food is safe to eat and what is not safe to eat. She is a conflict mediator sometimes. I don't know, things go wrong and we're having a conversation in English and Spanish, she's kind of the go-between. But Avi is wonderful. And, you know, so Juan Pablo comes up a lot. It's part of his job. He travels to the U.S. and when he's here, we often fly him out here to speak. You've spoken here. This is like your fourth time here, probably? Fourth or fifth?
Fifth, I think.
Fifth year, okay. Yeah, so when we heard that Juan Pablo was going to be up again this year, I asked the team, you know, hey, would anybody be interested in pitching in a couple bucks to fly Abby up from Bolivia as well? And the team, they just said, yeah, absolutely. And they completely paid for her ticket to come up here to be with us today. So that's how much she's loved by the team. They just were like, oh, yeah, we'd love to see Abby come up. And we have given them the full Washington State treatment while they've been up here since Wednesday. We made sure to invite them in a week when it rained every single day. But Barb Turecki took them to the Space Needle and Pike Place Market and all that stuff on Friday. And then yesterday we went to Snoqualmie Falls. Confession, I've lived here 10 years. It was my first time to the Snoqualmie Falls. But a very cool place. If you haven't been, I highly recommend it. And then they're here to speak with us today. They're going to meet with our team right after this. And then we've got some other events here for the rest of the weekend. So they're good friends. I appreciate you guys joining us. Any words do you want to share before we get into the interview?
Well, thank you for having us here. My title sounds kind of very complex. Just call me the foodie in Food for
Anything. Ah, there you go, yeah.
That explains it in a better way. Anyway, thank you guys. Yeah, it's really a pleasure and an honor to be able to share with you today.
Okay, great.
And for me, it's an honor as well. It's very nice to be here and to see friends. And when I first met you, I didn't know that I was meeting my friends. Yeah. Probably for many people, it's just people that they work with. But you are my friends. I love you very much. And thank you for all that you do.
Great. First couple questions I have for them are based on Food for the Hungry's just philosophical, what they do. If you're unfamiliar with the organization, they emphasize that poverty is multifaceted. When we talk about poverty, we're not just talking about, oh, I don't have any money. That is one form of poverty, but there are lots of different kinds of poverty. There's poverty of relationships. People who maybe just, they don't have anybody in their life, no family, no friends, or anything like that. Spiritual poverty, something I think we're all very familiar with. So when FH talks about poverty, they say that poverty is due to a breakdown in relationships. And there are four relationships that they emphasize: relationship with God, a relationship with others, relationship with yourself, and relationship with creation. So would you want to elaborate on that a little bit, about what FH does and their kind of their philosophy of the work that you guys do globally?
Absolutely. So just as Matt said, our understanding of poverty goes farther and beyond than just physical stuff or lacking of money, lack of resources. It really goes farther to explain how poverty came into the world. And it was basically creation. I mean, when God, a relational God, created us to be in relationships, mainly with Him, but also with others, with our neighbors, with the creation that He had for mankind, and with ourselves as well. So those four relationships were created and were great at the beginning in the creation. But sin came into the world, as we all know, and after that, those four relationships broke. And that's where poverty entered into the world. So poverty for us is really about relationships that don't work. It's not about the lack of money only. And believe me, I learned that I am poor too in many areas of my life. Although I have education, I have a job, and I have a car I can drive to school and many other things, I consider myself poor in many other areas of my life. So through this experience, we're trying to provide really food for the hungry, but not just physical food, but food to feed all the needs that we have. And we believe that restoring or reconciling those four broken relationships is really our main role.
Okay, thank you very much. In the interest of time, I'm going to cut out a question or two because I'm pontificating, I'm being long-winded today. So child sponsorship is obviously a very, very important part of what you guys do. And one of the questions that I often get about child sponsorship is when I sponsor a kid, where does the money go? Because I think often, if we don't think about it, we might think, well, obviously the money just goes right into the pockets of the kid. I send a check and it's forwarded to them. Historically, organizations have found that doesn't work. You just never know where that money is going to go. It creates a culture of dependence. So what does when someone sponsors a kid, where does that money go?
So the first thing and most important thing is that we need to create a dynamic of relational work. So in order to do that, you cannot just show up once a week or just show up once a month or once a year with money and just hang out, give hangouts to people. So the first thing that we have and where the money for child sponsorship goes is to fund our 24/7 community workers that are from that culture, that understand what the struggles are, and that are really able to build a relationship that may influence many of the areas of life of people in Uspa Uspa. So that's the main thing that that we fund. And the other thing is we, of course, develop programs. We help them accomplish the projects that they have in their community because it's their project, but it's really about equipping them with the right ideas about life, the right ideas about being a Christian, and the right ideas about development. So we try to equip them so that they can be sustainable. As you said, in a couple of years, we're going to pull out from there. FH will be gone because it's not our community. And we recognize that God has been there always. It's not that we are bringing God into the mix. God is the sovereign God. He's the creator. He's in control of everything. So we're going to pull out. But knowing that the seed is there, the seed of the right biblical worldview is there within churches, within local leaders, local government leaders, within families, within children, that's all that we are really looking forward to seeing in those communities. And the other piece that is great is that not only the child that is sponsored by an individual here in Gig Harbor gets to be benefited. So as you can see, it's children that are not necessarily sponsored but live in that community, in that neighborhood, they also get benefited out of your love and just the child sponsorship piece.
Okay, that's great. You were telling me a story the other day about a lady named Julia, and she came out of the child sponsorship program. Can you tell us that story about just the value, the impact that child sponsorship can have?
Yeah, sure. So let me illustrate this. This is Julia. She's a mother to four children. She's living in this neighborhood. And, her husband is away for long seasons, trying to get some temporary works to bring some income for the family to survive and to make it in this neighborhood. She's in top of these challenges. You know, she's got malnourished children, and their children are not healthy. So very challenging life, in short words. And she's got a health disease, she's got a heart issue, and she needs a surgery, but she cannot afford to pay for that, even though there's a public system that she could get into. It's just too expensive for her to pay. But then all of a sudden, there's a guy knocking at the door, and he says, I'm an FH worker, and I would like to get to meet your family. And so little by little, she starts to develop a relationship with this lady, and she starts, you know, talking about God and talking about education and how important nutrition is and what are the daily things that you can see God just on a daily basis in your life. Sometimes it's as you said on your introduction on the previous messages, Matt, sometimes we tend to make the gospel very complicated and about a lot of theology. And it's meant to be that way too, but what is the day-by-day thing that God is present on into your life? So we try to very, very simple to communicate those ideas through that staff there in Uspa Uspa. So she builds up this relationship with her and starts talking about all these subjects. And then all of a sudden, this lady's got a dream. You know, she's got a dream where Jesus Christ is with white cloth in, appears, shows up in his bedroom and kind of performs a free surgery in her heart and heals her. And next day, she's like, wow, I'm renewed. You know, she gives her life to Jesus, and then she starts changing every aspect of her life. Her perspective is 180 degrees different now. So she starts being a volunteer for FH, meaning that she's now, you know, we rely on volunteer people from those communities that are influential and can teach what we are teaching leaders, train of trainers. So she's a trainer now for other mothers that are struggling with the same issues in that neighborhood. And she, what's more, she opens the her house to have the FH training there, because you know, in that community we don't have a community room yet for those trainings. But she's willing and just very excited about that. So I always wonder how that happens. I don't think that, as I said, FH is bringing God into the mix. It's just we're just trying to facilitate something, and it's God's spirit who's really working there.
Yeah, that's good. So you can hear in that story that how FH just really emphasizes relationships and the spirit and God being there. And it's like we're not just doing work and thinking that these humanitarian projects are going to change lives. It's people doing life together. It's God working through people that actually brings about change. And it's not just a change in, you know, what we would call the field. There's really an emphasis on mutual transformation. You guys have witnessed, especially if you've gone to Bolivia, how this whole relationship has changed us as well. And we've seen God work in the teams that have gone down there, and people that sponsor kids, and you write letters, that kind of thing. And so Abby, she's on a lot of short-term teams. She brings teams from the U.S. down to Bolivia, and she's seen a lot of neat things. And so maybe give us an example of something you've seen, maybe from our team or from another team, of just what it's like to bring a short-term team from the U.S. into the field, maybe to do a home visit or to see what FH is doing there on the field.
Yeah, when we have these short-term visits to Bolivia, we do many things. We visit schools, we visit homes, we do work in gardens sometimes, and many things. But, you know, your specialty as Believers Fellowship is home visits. You do a lot of home visits comparing to other teams, and I love that too. And one example of change that I've seen is that in the first Believers Fellowship team I led, there was Yvonne. Many of you know her. And she speaks very well Spanish. Very good. She's very good. And she went to a visit for other family, in behalf of other family, and they met this child with Down syndrome.
Yeah.
That she has no access to the special education she needs and to food, like other children in the neighborhood. So Yvonne decided to sponsor her. And I've seen the relationship they have. And it's hard, but it really makes a difference for this family that someone cares about them. Even though Yvonne can communicate much more than other people to her sponsor child, she cannot have the answer or the response that she would like to, because Sandra, this little girl, is not able to the match. She draws something and sends in the letters. And I've seen other team members showing love to this child in a special way. It's an example of the love of God for us. We're not able to express all that we should, but He still loves us. And there are many examples of your church and your relationships with families, but this one caught my attention.
Yeah. Yeah, that has been cool to see their relationship. So we do have a video of an update from the office in Cochabamba that works in USPA. They sent this to Abby, and then she translated it for us, and we got subtitles edited in. I will say this about the video, and I apologize about this ahead of time. They say a lot, and so I tried to get as much as I could in there, but I hope you read really fast. That's all I'm gonna say. Or you know Spanish. If either one of those two things are true, you should be in good shape. Otherwise, you're gonna get maybe like half of the really good stuff. So can we get the first video?
Yo aquí en FH me he educado mucho, me han ayudado. He aprendido aquí a obedecer, a hacerle caso a mis padres, a las personas ayudarles, a cruzar la calle.
Antes yo no ahorraba. Ahora sí me ha dado más confianza a ahorrar, de poco en poco. y al último ya tengo platita para cualquier lo que me falte en mi hogar, ¿no?
Un poco ensalada comí, ahora ya hasta más ensaladas, más hígados, más pescados, quiere decir la profe, y como ellos a los pequeños también han enseñado y ellos ya dicen, nosotros tenemos que comer eso, entonces yo preparo eso para mis hijos.
Desde hace algunos años, Loma Pampa, una comunidad ubicada en una zona periurbana de la ciudad de Cochabamba, Bolivia, está experimentando cambios profundos al interior de algunas familias, debido a la intervención de la iglesia local, mediante el enfoque de Ministerio Integral de la Iglesia, promovido por la Fundación Contra el Hambre.
Estas acciones se enfocan en el tema de trabajo con la OTB, festejar Navidades, aperturar su iglesia hacia la comunidad para que hagan vigilancia nutricional de los niños menores de 5 años, trabajando de que los niños se formen con su carácter dentro de la infraestructura de la iglesia, a través juntamente con el liderazgo de la iglesia, visitando a los más vulnerables, a las viudas, a los huérfanos, llevando insumos, víveres que la iglesia recolecta para ayudar a los niños y por último llevando ropa, uniformes a aquellas personas más vulnerables.
La iglesia El Buen Pastor de Loma Pampa está cumpliendo su misión de servicio a la comunidad, pues 70 niños están siendo capacitados en principios bíblicos con la estrategia Apacienta mis ovejas, amo, cuyo fin es la transformación integral de los niños y niñas.
¿Chicos quieren pan?
¡Sí!
Fundación Contra el Hambre avanza con el liderazgo de la Iglesia El Buen Pastor para promover el servicio a los más vulnerables de la comunidad. Pero, ¿por qué esta iglesia trabaja con FH?
La iglesia realmente tenemos que salir afuera. Eso es lo que ahora estamos haciendo, realizando visitas a las familias necesitadas y también familias no necesitadas, porque realmente todos necesitan de la palabra de Dios.
¿Y cómo era la iglesia de Loma Pampa antes de trabajar con FH?
Bueno, a mi llegada la iglesia estaba casi con poca asistencia, casi un poco cerrado, no teniendo mucha visión de poder llegar a las familias de diferentes hogares. Entonces, cuando yo llegué ya me hice como miembro, entonces ya hemos hecho un plan de actividades para poder ya llegar a las familias, ganarse la confianza de la comunidad. Y lo hemos hecho ya visitando a las diferentes familias necesitadas, apoyando con víveres, apoyando con ropas también, ropas escolares, y ganarse la confianza de la comunidad, que la comunidad hable el bien de la iglesia, que, indicando que la iglesia sí trabaja por el bienestar de la sociedad que nos necesita.
El proyecto emprendido por FH ha permitido a la iglesia El Buen Pastor de Loma Pampa abrirse a la comunidad con actividades integrales como los huertos familiares, las capacitaciones sobre salud, vigilancia nutricional a niños, economía familiar y ahorro a grupos de mujeres, y dotación de tanques de agua para consumo humano, entre otros.
Gracias, FH, por
invitarnos. All right. I really like that video because I think you get a real good glimpse in that of what they do. I like how it showed them working with the church. Juan Pablo already mentioned, FH is not setting up camp there forever. This is a 10-year thing, and then they're moving on. And that's intentional because they don't want to set up this relationship where the community becomes dependent upon FH. And so they're trying to train the churches to think about their community and more than just the folks who are, gathered together there on Sunday morning. So you heard from the pastor and you heard from some of the, I think one of the guys was a deacon or something in the church, of how they're learning to get out and to check in on the most vulnerable. And they've even done some things like school supplies and stuff like that. I wonder if that was related to our short-term trip and the stuff that we went out and helped with, or was that a separate, or you might not even know. Like the backpacks and the school uniforms, was that a separate thing, or was that what
that
we ever...
That was one of your projects that I think 2 years ago?
Yeah.
School uniforms and some supplies to the children.
Yeah.
And it was very important because children, some of them were not attending school because they didn't have the uniform.
Yeah.
So you helped
them. Yeah. Yeah, and I like how the one guy worded it, that the work that they do related to that stuff builds trust in the community, that the community learns to see the church as a good thing for their neighborhood, and he says it's important for people to speak well of the church and for the church to be a force for good in the society. So if you'd like to get involved with the C2C, there's a couple ways that you can do that. The most important thing that you can do is sponsor a child, and a lot of you already do that. I do not have packets today, but we will have them in the near future. I'm thinking in the fall, at the end, once we get through the summer and you guys disappear and then come back, once everybody's back, we'll do another child sponsorship push. And if you don't sponsor a child and you'd like to, you have the opportunity then. You can go to Bolivia. That's another great thing that you can do. We are leaving in 2 weeks, so it's a little bit too late to go this year, but we'll go again next year, and so you can join us for that. And then also, we're always raising money to fund the community projects and things like that. Like I said, last year we did the clean water project. This year we're working with that church, El Buen Pastor, that you heard so much about. We're working in empowering them and setting them up for success in their community. And so if you'd like to contribute to that, on Easter, we've kind of developed this tradition of donating every bit of the offering that comes in on Easter to projects outside the walls of our church, even modeling what the church in F8 in the video we're learning to do. And so some of that will go to the Bolivia C2C, and others of it will go to other projects that we're doing outside the walls of our church. So I encourage you to be generous on that. On Easter, all of the offering is going to go to projects like this. One last question before we get into our final video, and I guess this is for both of you. If somebody already sponsors a child, and many people here already do, what is the best thing that they can do in that relationship?
Sal said that pray for them. You can provide a different and powerful message for their lives. Poverty is a cycle. So all their lives, for generations, those children, parents, and grandparents have been told, oh, you're poor, you're going to stay poor, why should you invest in education, that's a waste of time. You're dumb, ultimately. You're coming from a rural area, people here in the city are better than you. But when they hear something like in a letter, when you write to them on a simple letter, you may be wondering, does that make a difference? Well, it does. It does make a difference. When you hear something different, God loves you, God cares about you, you can accomplish this. Education is a good thing. You can change your life. You can trust Jesus to do that in your life. That's really powerful. And that can really, we have seen it. We have seen it with many people, that those letters, prayer, and that connection can really change lives for both ends.
Thank you.
You can also ask them about their dreams, what they want to do in the future, and not only where they would like to work, but if they want to travel or create something. Ask about their dreams, ask them about what they are learning now, so they will pay more attention about what they are learning. Also, share about your own lives. Tell them what you do for fun. Tell them if you need them to pray for you or your families, ask them for prayer. We want to pray for you guys.
That's good. That's a good reminder. Thank you. Okay, I do want to close with a video, and then I will get back here to transition us into the Lord's Supper. But this is just pictures of a bunch of kids that are benefiting from the C2C relationship. So before we pull the video, can we get a thank you to Juan Pablo and Abby?